is Friday, December 11th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, we take an in-depth look at the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines around the world.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Advisory Committee endorsed emergency use authorization for the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine.
Also ahead, Argentina takes a step toward legalizing abortion.
The bill allows for abortions to be carried out up to the 14th week of pregnancy.
Plus, the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has carried out its 9th execution. These stories and more are next. Our top story today. Israel and Morocco have agreed to normalize ties, U.S. President Donald Trump announced Thursday, making Morocco the 4th Arab country to establish diplomatic relations with Israel in the past 4 months. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to hold a phone conversation with Morocco's King Mohammed VI today, with President Trump on the call. As part of the deal, the U.S. agreed to recognize Morocco's control of the Western Sahara. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
First, it was the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, then Sudan, and now Morocco agreed to establish full diplomatic relations with Israel. A jubilant Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke after lighting Hanukkah candles at the Western Wall with U.S. Ambassador David Friedman.
The people of Morocco and the Jewish people have had a warm relationship in the modern period. Everybody knows the tremendous friendship shown by the kings of Morocco and the people of Morocco to the Jewish community there. I think that this is the foundation on which we can now build this peace. We'll resume liaison offices quickly between Israel and Morocco and work as rapidly as possible to establish full diplomatic relations.
As part of the deal, President Donald Trump said the U.S. would recognize Morocco's claim over the disputed Western Sahara region. The Sahara was a former Spanish colony and has been in dispute between the Moroccan government and the separatist Polisario movement, which is backed by Algeria. The Polisario group condemned the announcement and said it changes nothing in legal terms. Israeli analysts said they do not believe that U.S. President-elect Joe Biden will change the policy once he takes office. Bruce Matty Weitzman, an Israeli expert on Northern Africa, said the control of the Western Sahara has been Morocco's most important foreign policy issue since the 1970s.
So it's been a long haul for the Moroccans. For a long time, they've had the advantage on the ground, controlling 80% of the territory without any significant military threat to that control, but without the de jure international recognition of its claim.
Hundreds of thousands of Israelis have Moroccan heritage, and thousands travel to Morocco each year. Now they will be able to visit on direct flights. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Next up, the World Health Organization is reporting nearly 69 million global cases of the virus and over 1.5 million deaths. The latest development on vaccines is in the U.S., where a government advisory panel has recommended emergency use of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine, which means Americans could begin being vaccinated as soon as this weekend. Earlier this week, the country recorded its highest death toll from COVID-19 with more than 3,100 deaths in a single day. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story.
Open your syringe.
In anticipation of the arrival of COVID-19 vaccines, hospitals are training staff to administer them. On Thursday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Advisory Committee endorsed emergency use authorization for the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine after hearing a wide range of concerns. FDA's Doran Fink leads the Division of Vaccines and Related Products Applications.
The American public demands and deserves a rigorous, comprehensive, and independent review of the data.
The FDA does not have to follow the committee's recommendation, but is expected to do so. This means the vaccine could be administered as soon as this weekend, an achievement touted by President Donald Trump, who hosted a vaccine summit earlier this week without inviting members of President-elect Joe Biden's team. The transition teams have only recently started communicating as Trump continues to deny he lost the election.
The work that's been done is incredible, and it will be incredible for the next administration, and hopefully the next administration will be the Trump administration.
On the same day, Biden introduced his health team and detailed his plan to fight the coronavirus when he takes office in January. He asked Americans to wear a mask for the first 100 days, promised to reopen schools and deliver on vaccines.
At least 100 million COVID vaccine shots into the arms of the American people in the first 100 days. 100 million shots in the first 100 days.
Earlier this week, the U.S. recorded its highest death toll from COVID-19, with more than 3,100 deaths in a single day. There are now over 288,000 deaths and more than 15 million cases in the U.S., numbers that are expected to rise by the time Biden is inaugurated. Anand Parekh is the Bipartisan Policy Center's chief medical advisor.
Focusing on the right communication messages, ensuring that healthcare professionals are equipped with what they need, ensuring that vaccine distribution is ongoing. All of that is really sort of, that starts on day one.
First to be vaccinated are the tens of millions of healthcare workers, followed by staff and residents of nursing homes, essential workers, people with underlying medical conditions, and older Americans. The rest of the population will have to wait until April or May of 2021. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Less than a week after the UK began distributing the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, there are concerns of allergic reactions to the shot. Two people have had anaphylaxis and another had an allergic reaction. Britain's medicines regulator says anyone with a history of anaphylaxis to a medicine or food should not get the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Adam Reed of Reuters has the story.
A warning by Britain's regulators over the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine is only directed at people with a history of certain significant allergic reactions. And it comes after UK officials reported a small number of adverse reactions in people who received the jab on the first day of its rollout. Two cases of anaphylaxis and one possible allergic reaction were recorded, prompting a revision of guidelines. Put simply, anaphylaxis is a condition that can cause throat swelling, breathing difficulty and problem swallowing. The UK's National Health Service even describes it as severe and sometimes life-threatening. Late on Wednesday, the UK regulator said anyone with a history of anaphylaxis to a vaccine, medicine or food should not get the vaccine. An expert from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine advised Reuters that anyone who's ever needed to use an EpiPen should delay having this vaccine, at least until a reason for the adverse reaction has been clarified. Severe allergies are very rare, however. That's according to London's Queen Mary Hospital, who also told us that in 2012, there were only 7 hospital admissions per 100,000 people for severe allergies. Some experts Reuters spoke with praised UK regulators' caution, while others, such as a representative of the Mayo Clinic in the US, said these added restrictions in Britain were, quote, overdoing. The vaccine's maker, Pfizer, had excluded people with a history of significant adverse reaction from late-stage trials of its COVID-19 vaccine.
Thanks to Adam Reed of Reuters for that report. Australia has cancelled the production of a locally made vaccine against COVID-19 after trials showed it could interfere with HIV diagnosis. Emma McCarthy of Reuters reports.
Australia has cancelled the production of a domestic coronavirus vaccine after trials showed that it could lead to false positive tests for HIV. The developers of the drug, the University of Queensland and biotech firm CSL, report that the vaccine did show a robust response to combating COVID-19 in a phase 1 trial. But finding a fix to the HIV problem could take another year of research. The vaccine was one of 4 candidates contracted by the Australian government. CSL and the Australian government had together decided to stop phase 2 and phase 3 trials. The government has instead secured additional doses of rival vaccines, such as Novavax. Meanwhile, pharmaceutical giants Sanofi and Britain's GlaxoSmithKline's candidate have also reported setbacks. On Friday, the companies said that clinical trials showed that their own vaccine created what they call a, quote, low immune response in older people. It means a potential vaccine launch from them may be delayed until the end of next year.
That was Emma McCarthy of Reuters. Now to South Africa. As the nation records the highest number of COVID-19 cases on the African continent amid a second wave of the pandemic, residents are cautiously optimistic that a vaccine will be available soon. South Africa participated in clinical trials for the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine candidate, but the country is also closely watching the rollout of vaccines in Europe and the United States. For the latest, VOA's Chinedu Afor speaks with reporter Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Finally, a lot of people think that the end is near. But, you know, South Africa at the moment now, we're entering our second wave, so people are extremely worried as well. Our infection rates are spiking, deaths are going up. So when they see on the TV over here it happening and the vaccine being rolled out in Europe and in America, they want it as soon as possible. But they also realize that it's going to take quite some time for the companies and all the other people involved in the vaccine rollout to actually get to rolling it out in Africa and South Africa. So I guess the public are impatient, but also the feeling I get is that they are sensible.
Any update on the South African version of this COVID-19 vaccine?
Not at the moment. Things are quiet over there. I know there was controversy. A lot of criticism did emerge recently with regard to Anthony Fauci over there in the US saying that he thought that the Oxford vaccine had been hurried, and he subsequently apologized for that. And, you know, the South African vaccine is basically the same as the UK vaccine, the South African leg of that Oxford vaccine. So I know that a few months ago they did enroll the final person in the South African leg of that vaccine, and since then, though, things have been pretty quiet. But I do know that Professor Shabir Mahdi, who is on this university over here, and his team have been hard at work, and every now and again they have been released statements to say that things are going well. But in this world and in the race to find a vaccine, every now and again they have to release a statement saying that things are going very bad. The last report I got was things were on track, but obviously other companies are well ahead of where this particular trial is at the moment.
That was reporter Darren Taylor in Johannesburg speaking to VOA's Chinedu Afor in Washington. While the world waits for COVID-19 vaccines, many are facing long waits to get COVID tests and results. Matt Dibble looks into recent breakthroughs that may have more of us conducting tests at home for the virus.
Though COVID-19 vaccines are on the way, health experts are cautioning that the need for frequent COVID-19 testing will be with us for a long time. Adequately testing the U.S. population has been a persistent challenge. Now there is hope for a new approach, self-testing at home. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
Rapid, sensitive, specific home testing, even one that you might not even need a prescription for, so that people can have within their own power to know.
Recent technological advances suggest that widespread home testing is within reach. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has authorized the first at-home COVID-19 test that generates results in less than an hour. Dr. John Chu of Sutter Health in California led clinical studies of the test.
It is essentially a lab test at home.
On par, or at least close to par, as what we consider the gold standard PCR testing.
There are enzymes in these solutions so that when the sample is placed, it amplifies the amount of genetic material that's there. The detector can detect it, and then within 30 minutes, a result will come out. How much nicer would it be for it to be able to be done at home and keep people isolated?
Chu says the tests will also provide an advantage when used in clinics.
When we can get results that are lab quality very quickly, we can help make decisions very quickly.
The company plans widespread distribution of the test in the U.S. this spring. Another breakthrough in testing comes from artificial intelligence. Researchers at the University of Oklahoma found that the cough of a person infected with COVID-19 has a unique sound signature that can be detected using AI, even in people with no discernible symptoms. Dr. Ali Imran led the research.
then we built on that initial finding to try to create an app.
The app first had to learn to isolate a cough sound from all the background noise.
About 50,000 different type of coughs were used to train it, and then almost same number of non-cough sounds were used.
Then the app was fine-tuned using the coughs of COVID-19 patients. Similar research at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology shows AI can detect a COVID-19 cough with nearly 100% accuracy. Industry groups around the world have joined the race to bring cough-detecting apps to the public.
The beauty of this is that it is low-cost and it is repeatable, and it can be done every day, and it can be done several times a day.
In 2021, testing for COVID-19 may become just another part of our daily routines. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco.
European Union leaders have reached a hard-fought deal to cut the bloc's greenhouse gas emissions by at least 55% by the end of the decade compared with 1990 levels. This is VOA. International aid groups said today that at least four staff members have been killed in the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. The Danish Refugee Council says its three staffers killed last month had worked as guards at a project site. The group also says that due to lack of communications and ongoing insecurity, it has not yet been able to reach their families. Separately, the International Rescue Committee says one of its colleagues was killed in the Hitsats refugee camp in Shire. The Tigray region remains largely sealed off from the outside world as worried humanitarian organizations warn of growing hunger, attacks on refugees, and dwindling medicine. The U.S. Justice Department late Thursday carried out the latest execution of a federal prisoner during the presidential transition period, something unprecedented in modern times. The execution of Brandon Bernard by lethal injection was the ninth federal execution after an almost 20-year hiatus. Bernard was convicted in 2000 with an accomplice, Christopher Villalva, of carjacking and murdering Todd and Stacy Bogley in Texas. At the time of the crime, Bernard was 18. The Justice Department executed Villalva in September. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected a clemency petition for Bernard. Five jurors from the trial of the two men had backed that petition, saying Bernard's lawyers did a poor job defending him at trial. Bernard apologized for his actions before the execution. Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Lawmakers in Argentina's lower house have passed a bill that would legalize abortion in most cases, responding to long-sought demands from women's rights activists. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has the latest.
Protesters fill the streets of Buenos Aires as lawmakers debate a bill legalizing abortion in most cases. Demonstrators for and against the initiative had gathered in separate areas outside the Congress building. The bill, which will need approval from the country's Senate, allows for abortions to be carried out up to the 14th week of pregnancy. Backed by President Alberto Fernandez, the bill has been approved in a 131-117 vote with six abstentions. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A lawsuit filed this week alleges abuses against two African immigrants detained in the U.S. state of Ohio. The lawsuit says that officers at the Butler County Jail repeatedly beat Cameroonian refugee Bayong Brown Bayong and Ethiopian Somali man Ahmed Adam while they were detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The lawsuit says officers knocked out one of Bayong's teeth and threatened to stuff Adam's prayer rug down a toilet. When called for comments, the Butler County Jail referred VOA to the Butler County Sheriff's Office, which did not respond to repeated requests for comments. The allegations of abuse in Ohio come on the heels of the controversial deportations from the U.S. of dozens of Cameroonian asylum seekers in recent months who fled their home country's civil war. Activists are calling for an end to the deportations to Cameroon. For more, I spoke with Sylvie Bello of the Cameroon American Council. Sylvie, thank you so much for joining us. Can you first give us an overview of why so many Cameroonians have been deported recently?
Yeah, so Cameroonians are the largest African nationals, and in many detentions, the largest Black nationals, and in some detention centers, the largest nationals, period. So mass deportation of Cameroonians is to be, I want to say, expected unless we have immigration policies that prevents the deportation. So yes, they're going to deport folks, but we have been able, together with our allies, to push for some of these men and women to come out the flight right up to the last minute. We've had people being pulled out of the flight and the doors shut and they're gone.
Now, U.S. immigration policy under Trump have been characterized by what's called maximum deterrence. So lots of deportations, building the wall, lengthy imprisonment in ICE detention centers. And the administration says that the point of this is to deter anyone from coming to the United States who isn't a real asylum seeker, a real refugee, someone who has a real threat that they need to escape. And the idea is that by being so harsh toward people who come and claim asylum, that it will convince people who do not have real asylum claims not to come. How would you respond to this, particularly for the case of Cameroon, where there have been so many asylum seekers coming from Cameroon to the U.S., but also so many being deported back to Cameroon?
When Trump put policies on Cameroon, when they say that they will take Cameroon out of AGOA, a trade initiative, for the simple reason and a very effective reason of human rights violations, right, then you would think we should provide them with sanctuary and asylum when they seek it from the jump.
And what's your concern? You know, already there have been dozens of Cameroonians deported to their home country. What's your concern for what happens if more Cameroonians are deported?
So what will happen in a greater degree will be what had happened in the first two in October and November. Disappearances. There are families today. There are men and women that we supported that we cannot track them and their families cannot track them. They have disappeared, which is why we do need folks to stop the deportation. And one of the ways to stop the deportation is a TPS for Cameroon, which is what we're pushing.
TPS, that's temporary protected status. Why do you think that's so important for the U.S. to designate for Cameroon?
So TPS, as the name implies, is temporary protected status, right? That's, you know, why is it temporary? It's mostly because it's 18 months, right? And in those 18 months, it gives you time to get your papers, get your ID, get, most important, stops deportation, right? That's the first thing it does, right? It stops deportation to the country that has been assigned the TPS. And even people who get asylum, right? So TPS will not just be good for our community members who are in detention. TPS is great for those who are released on parole. Because remember, when you're released out of detention, they don't automatically give you papers. What TPS does is that it gives you papers. It gives you an ID. You can go to school, right? You can get your papers. Let's say you were a nurse. I'm working with a young lady right now who was a nurse in Cameroon, but she came out with parole, which means she cannot work. She doesn't have papers. So we still supported her when she was in detention. We're supporting her now that she's out of detention, right? But with TPS, she can get her nursing degrees, you know, evaluated. She can take classes because she can have an ID. She can work and send money back home, right? So that is what TPS does. And folks may have heard of TPS because currently some African countries who are currently on TPS includes Liberia still, South Sudan, and Somalia, right? So there may be some folks on the continent who would, you know, be familiar with TPS. But in Cameroon, that is why we are fighting for TPS for Cameroon, because Cameroon has five armed conflicts, has a civil war, has cessation. I mean, you would think that Cameroon will be at the top of anybody's list.
That's Sylvie Bello of the Cameroon American Council. Sylvie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our editor, Keith Wallace, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.